Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's hard to imagine that we are now entering our third year of the pandemic. And Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana, has been with us all along the way, and we appreciate same. And he joins us again today to start off 2022, the third year of this pandemic. Doc, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Noel. It's good to be back with you. And I very much share that sentiment. It's a little bit mind-boggling. To now be in the third year and to still be back here in a very large surge, but here we are, and we'll get through it like we always have. But, it's a heck of a way to start 2022, I'll tell you that.
Well, if nothing else, it's consistently predictably unpredictable.
I know it really sounds
idiotic, but that's what it is.
That's what it is. It's been very hard to predict this. I certainly myself would not have predicted in the earlier part of this pandemic that we would be in this position this far out. Many other people didn't predict that as well. But, the virus is in charge, and here we are.
So where are we with our numbers here in the state? I mean, I just keep seeing that, no longer are they reported in hundreds. It's in thousands now.
Yeah, it's an interesting place to be. So, on one hand, there has never been more COVID out there in Louisiana than right now. And I say that in full cognition that I've said that line to you a few times before in the past.
Right.
But the case counts just blow away case counts that we have seen during prior surges. In fact, today when we update our dashboard at noon, we'll be reporting out over 14,000 new cases. And that's the highest number of single-day new cases that we've ever reported out. Our percent positivity this week went up more than double. Last week it was 10.7, and this week it's 27.1% of all tests are coming back positive. So those are the highest numbers that we've ever put out, the percent positivity, with the exception of, the first couple of weeks when we had no testing. Now we have a ton of testing. On the other hand, and this is the sliver of good news in this, the acuity of the patients we're seeing in the hospital, meaning how sick patients are getting, is not as bad as it was with Delta or prior surges. We're still seeing a lot of patients because when you have this many cases, even if marginally they're not getting as sick, and I believe that to be true, you still, these big numbers still add up. So the hospitals are still very, very busy. But thankfully, on average, patients getting infected with Omicron are not getting as sick as patients who were infected with Delta. And that's the one encouraging news that I see in all of this.
Yeah. Are we been able to determine, I know we've had difficulty in collecting this data, on two fronts. One, we're convinced that the predominant number of these cases are, in fact, Omicron, even in spite of us not really testing to see what variant folks have?
Yeah, no question. And we do test. It just doesn't happen in real time for the patient. There's a lot of genomic sequencing happening. It just takes a little bit longer, so it ends up being somewhat irrelevant for that patient. But we do have good visibility on the overall outbreak. So in Louisiana, we're estimating about 90-91% of all new cases are Omicron. In our region of the country, which is, you know, the way the feds break it up, it's us, Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arkansas, that number is about 98%, and nationally it's about 95%. But we're doing a lot of sequencing. I mean, we can't sequence every positive case, particularly now when there's so many of them. But we do quite a lot, so we feel very confident that at least 9 out of 10 cases right now are Omicron, if not a little bit more than that.
And it would be safe to say as well, Doc, that these numbers are actually understated because we have a lot of at-home testing that's being done that's not reported.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of people that are having a tough time finding at-home tests if they want them right now. And, you know, to remind your listeners, if you go to a lab, if you get tested at a hospital, if you get tested at one of these big drive-through sites, we in the Department of Health get that result and that gets counted. If you take an at-home test that you pick up at the drugstore, we generally don't find out about that, so it doesn't enter our number. So as more and more of these at-home tests are out there, which, you know, they're, as much as there's a shortage, there's still more than there have been in the past, those cases just don't get counted. So, you know, I think it's safe to say the real number of positive people out there is probably somewhere between 3 and 5 times what we can actually count, because you have people doing at-home tests, and then you have people that just don't get tested at all and never find out that they're positive.
There seems to be a little controversy with where these tests are being sent out. It's safe to say not all of these tests are being conducted within the state, that we're utilizing labs throughout the country, right?
We are. There's a decent number. You know, since COVID, there's been a few in-state labs, large in-state labs that have either sprung up or really increased their capacity. So, you know, we in the state contract with a network of in-state labs to do, you know, a lot of this drive-through testing that's being done. And most of those, most of our contracts are in-state labs, some of them business ventures that, you know, were stood up during COVID. If you go to a third-party site or, you know, a clinic that contracts with like LabCorp or Quest, those probably get sent out of state. But a decent percentage are actually being done in state right now.
But it's not unusual that it gets sent to other states. I don't know why that's an issue. I mean, it's just...
If
there's available capacity in Michigan, why not send it to Michigan to get it done, right?
It's not unusual. And, you know, I mean, we might as well talk about the testing challenges. You know, the challenge right now is these at-home rapid antigen tests. There's just a huge demand for good reason, because they're very helpful, and there's not enough out there to meet that demand. There's more out there now than before, but nothing close to what the demand is. That's the test that people are having a hard time finding. The more formal PCR tests, the ones that will be conducted typically at a drive-through or certainly in the hospital, usually in the clinic as well, we are not having any real supply issues on that. We still have more capacity in terms of running those tests. So that's not a crunch. The crunch is really the rapid antigen tests.
So let's talk about the strategy. Let me ask this follow-up question to on genomic sequencing. You answered one part. The second part was, are we able to determine right now the number of breakthrough cases? I know in my circle of friends, everyone's vaccinated, probably 2/3 got the booster, and they got Omicron. And yeah. I mean, almost without exception. There's very few people that I know that have not been infected.
Yeah, me too. We are, and you know, the numbers have gone up, as has Omicron, but they're not far from what we were seeing earlier on. So for every new case diagnosed and reported over the past week, 66% of them were people that were not fully vaccinated. So the balance of those were people that had breakthrough infections. That's a little bit of a higher number than in months earlier, but not that much higher. If you look at people that are currently hospitalized, like, you know, there's about 1,400 hospitalized patients with COVID right now in the state. About 75-76% of them are not fully vaccinated. And when I say fully vaccinated, it's getting a little bit confusing now. I mean, they haven't finished their first two shots. I'm not even talking about getting boosted right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about these rapid COVID tests. There are a number of folks that are saying that we've created an environment now that we actually may be over-testing in some respects and kind of a little bit lost sight of what we should be doing, because we have a lot of folks without symptoms that are running to get a test.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's easy to say that until it's you, your family, and there's value in you knowing if you're positive, not because it's interesting, but because the same thing holds for Omicron that held for previous variants, which is you can easily be positive, have no symptoms, but still spread it to someone else. And again, even though on average Omicron is not causing as severe illness, if you have any choice in the matter, you still don't want to get it, and you still don't want to pass it on to your friends or family. So, you know, I mean, I'm just talking real life. You know, we just came off the holidays. People want to gather with their family. Using rapid tests at home to test people before that gathering, I think, is a very prudent thing to do. I mean, I think some people might call it that over-testing, but, you know, I don't want to expose my parents. And so, you know, me taking a test before I see them, you know, is important to me. I think some might call that over-testing. I don't think I agree with that.
But how do we square this up? There's a number of new studies, and I'm not sure if you read about this, about the efficacy of these rapid tests, that, you know, they're missing the first 2 to 3 days of infection before they pick it up. And now there's marked differences of opinion as to whether or not we should be swabbing the tongue and the mouth area as opposed to the nasal.
Yeah. Yeah, these tests are not perfect by any means, and you and I have talked about this a couple times before. They're not as sensitive. They really only pick up when you have high levels of virus actively circulating. The hope with these tests is that they pinpoint a little bit more when someone might actually be infectious. But as you mentioned, you're probably infectious for a day, maybe a day and a half before a rapid test is going to be positive. And that said, these tests don't always perform at 100% of their intended function. The way to improve the functionality of these tests is to do them in series. So, you know, I will just give a personal example. I spent some time with my parents over the holidays, and, you know, we tested 2 or 3 successive days prior to going there. When you do that, I think you can be pretty confident about it. If you do a one-off test, it's not 100%. I mean, it's probably, you know, maybe 75%. That's a ballpark, maybe a little bit less than that. But, you know, when you're in this, I think, you know, you don't want to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. It is valuable information, but it is not anywhere close to 100%.
So what does that mean, though? I mean, so really the best information to our listening audience is that if you really want to get something meaningful out of it is to test yourself with at-home tests on successive days.
Yeah.
And just
day one
being negative. If you're at home and, you know, there are 4 people living in the home and 3 people have, you know, are confirmed positive cases, and you're curious about yourself, and you take that one at-home test and it comes up negative, you shouldn't be beating your chest walking around the neighborhood.
That's right. And that's a real snapshot in time. And you could easily be on the track to flip positive tomorrow. And the test is not really sensitive enough to pick that up, whereas a PCR test might. But then you have to deal with a 1 to 3 day turnaround time. So this is how I use antigen tests mostly. And look, we're just swimming in COVID right now. There is so much COVID. Like you said, I mean, everyone's positive. I mean,
it's almost, Doc, is it fair to say, this is not a question of if, this is a question of when, unless you're like completely resistant to, you know, this infection. It's almost as if you're getting it. Now, it's like the question is this week or 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. For a lot of people, I think that's unfortunately true. We're just swimming in it right now. So this is how I use, you know, rapid tests. You know, I went to see my folks, you know, they're a little bit older. I don't want to give COVID to them. So we tested, you know, my wife and I tested 2 or 3 days ahead of time in a row before we went there. And with that, we felt pretty confident. You know, I think if you just take one test, one of these antigen tests, you can be a little bit confident, but really not that much. So if you're testing for a specific purpose, like you're going to be, you know, visiting someone who is at higher risk, for example, if you have access, it's better to take 2 or 3 days in a row a test. I think the challenge now is, you know, it's hard to find these tests right now. It's, you know, you go to a store, they have them in stock one day, they're out of stock the next day. There's just not enough supply to meet the demand right now.
I was reading an article, and one of the physicians kind of put it this way about the research that's gone on, because, you know, there's so much conflicting evidence that's revealing itself. And they were specifically talking about nasal swab versus, swabbing in the throat and the tongue and otherwise. That he says, at this point, researchers see riddles, not solutions. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that rings true. You know, the swabbing in the throat, that's still a developing area. I think there's it's interesting. I mean, I think it's something that we follow along, but I don't think that's fully established yet. What is fully established?
Not.
I mean, it's been pretty well accepted that you do get a better swab if you do, as opposed to a nasal swab, you do a nasal pharyngeal swab. And you know, this is, we were doing this a lot more in the earlier days of the pandemic. This is a long swab.
Those are painful.
All the way back. Really painful. Tickles your brain. I mean, it really goes far in.
Yeah. They found that little pea brain I have. They went all the way.
They got a good sample of that.
Right.
They, I mean, you're just not going to do that to yourself. You know? So, I mean,
no, sir, I'm not.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of hospitals are still doing nasopharyngeal swabs, because when you're in a hospital, it's a more, you know, it's more important to get an accurate swab. If you're doing an at-home test, I think you generally accept a little degree of error on either side of it.
Absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana, 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana, and we've been talking about the highly contagious Omicron variant that's presented. Doc, I wanted to go back to this home test one more time, if you would indulge me. And it's all about this timing. So if I take this test on day one and it comes back negative, and you're saying that what you want to do is successive days, but I'm not in a kind of a quarantine, semi-quarantine environment, and I'm out and about in the public, and I then test on day two, and if the possibility of the frailty of these home tests is they don't pick up the infection in the first 2 to 3 days, this is a numbers game, right? This is a probability game that we're playing. And it's it's a cycle that doesn't bode well for this type of testing, period, in my view.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I'll tell you, I mean, it would bode better if there was enough of these tests out there that people could test more frequently, but that's not the case right now. You know, to compare to the PCR test will detect very minute levels of virus. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing if you're on the front end of your infection because it'll detect it oftentimes, you know, either around the time that you become infectious to others or maybe even just before that, which is helpful for the situation you're kind of alluding to. It's a little bit of a hindrance on the back end because these PCR tests will continue to be positive long after you are no longer infectious. I mean, you know, 2 or 3 weeks sometimes after you're no longer infectious. And on an individual level, that's not terribly relevant or helpful to people. So these antigen tests, you know, they're less sensitive. So it takes more virus present to flip these tests positive. And what that means is that, you know, let's say you were exposed yesterday and the virus is growing and growing inside your body. If you test today, maybe you have enough virus to trigger it to be positive. Maybe you don't. Maybe it wouldn't be positive until tonight or tomorrow morning. But you took that test this morning, it was negative, and then you go about your day thinking you're fine. That's the rub with these tests is you have that window where you might just not hit that sensitivity level. So it is much more helpful to do these tests if you can, 1 or 2 or 3, you know, a couple of days in a row. But you're absolutely right. You know, if you had an exposure and you take these antigen tests, it's possible that you test negative, but by the end of the day, the virus might have grown to the point that it actually would flip positive. That's the margin of error you have to accept if you're doing one of these rapid tests.
Right. It just, yeah. So, there's a new variant out there. I got a lot of texts coming in about it. It originated from Cameroon, I think, and it's revealed itself in France first. Are you guys hearing anything about that?
Nothing too concerning. I know what you're talking about. It's 1.640.1, I think, if I got those numbers right. I might have mixed it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's
actually,
it.
It's been on our radar since, I want to say, either late November or early December. And the number of cases that France has is relatively small, somewhere between 20 and 40. And in that time, it doesn't seem to have exploded much different than what we saw with Omicron. You know, South Africa and Botswana rang the bell on Omicron just, you know, a week or so before Thanksgiving. And then by Thanksgiving, it had really, really exploded. So the WHO has not yet declared this a variant of concern. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a big problem. It seems like, you know, there's always these variants and you just got to see what happens to it. But so far, it's not exhibited any of the explosive transmissibility that Omicron has.
When we look at what's happening now, I mean, we don't hear much conversation any longer, good or bad, I'm not sure, or if we've disproved this about herd immunity. I mean, when we talk about the number of folks that have come through multiple variants, been negative, and in some cases now a second negative, even in spite of being vaccinated, is herd immunity a concept that's still relevant?
I don't know. You know, to be completely honest with you, I've thought a lot about this over the break, and you know, I don't know. I don't know if this virus mutates to the point, you know, mutates enough to render the concept of herd immunity irrelevant. In my mind, that's an open question. And, you know, I fully recognize that at the onset of this pandemic, herd immunity was the hope. It was the goal. We were eagerly looking towards that. And some viruses, you know, were able to obtain that. You know, measles is a is a really good example of that. Some viruses, like the flu, they mutate so much that you really never get to herd immunity. What you get to is a place where the disease is just manageable by virtue of people having been exposed to something similar and having enough therapeutics that it doesn't really disrupt society. Now, COVID mutates a lot. It doesn't mutate as much as flu, but it mutates more than measles and some other viruses. So, you know, I think that's an open question. What I do think is happening now, and I think you and I have also chatted on this a few times in the past, you know, I think we are watching real time what a transition from a pandemic to endemic looks like. And I think that's, you know, this Omicron wave that we're very much, I mean, we haven't even peaked yet. We're very much in the middle of, you know, I think slash hope that this is, you know, beginning on the path of this virus becoming less dangerous and something that we can live with. You know, there's more therapeutics out there now that they are in short supply too. There'll be more down the road. I mean, to me, that's really encouraging. So I think that's the realistic hope now, is that as this becomes endemic, we have enough tools between medicines and understanding of the virus to be able to live with this thing. I really don't, at least for the time being, personally see herd immunity as a realistic goal. But that's just me talking. That's not a formal public health, you know, ruling on that.
How concerned were you when you heard that the monoclonal antibodies that have been dispensed for a period of time now are not effective against Omicron?
Well, we knew it was a possibility. And these monoclonal antibodies are surgical in their precision. That's why we call them monoclonal, as opposed to the polyclonal antibodies that one develops after either having the virus, you know, being infected, or getting vaccinated. Those are polyclonal responses where, again, we do see this with Omicron, you might lose some efficaciousness with a new variant, but you typically don't lose everything. These monoclonals are more narrow in their target. And so when you knock out whatever that monoclonal target is, it just renders it relatively useless. So that's what's happened with two of our three monoclonals. Unfortunately, the two that we were using more, the Regeneron and Eli Lilly's bamlanivimab, they're effectively worthless against Omicron. There's one that remains efficacious. It's called Sotrovimab. It's a little bit newer. It's unfortunately in very, very short supply. We only, as the state, got allocated last week 340 doses for the whole state. I mean, it's a joke. It's really, really limited. So, you know, that's unfortunate. On the other side, there's some other therapeutics that we can use now. A good study came out a couple of weeks ago that showed remdesivir, which was one of the first medicines introduced with COVID. It was typically given to people who were hospitalized with COVID as an infusion. There was a good study that showed if you give that 3 days in a row as an IV infusion to people who aren't yet hospitalized, it does the same thing that monoclonals does. It keeps them out of the hospital. So that's encouraging. We have good supply of remdesivir, so much that it's not rationed at all. It's just on the private market, you know, easily obtainable. And so now, you know, the challenge is kind of retooling some of these monoclonal infusion centers to do remdesivir instead, which is hard because you got to bring someone back 3 days in a row to get it. But that's a tool. And these orals, particularly Pfizer's oral Paxlovid, although it's very, very limited in supply, it also has really good effectiveness against Omicron. So as companies are able to make more of that stuff, that'll be a real help.
Yep. All right, we got to get to another break. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We've been talking about the contagious nature of the Omicron variant and the downstream implications. We will be right back to continue this conversation when we return. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana. Doc, you were talking about the flu. I don't know how much of a flu season that we've had thus far, but there are seem to be a first identified case referred to as a flu-rona in Southern California, a combination of flu and COVID.
Yeah, we've had a couple of the flu ronas here too. I saw one myself when I was working in the ER the last shift. They're out there. It's not fun. The patient I saw that had both did okay, but I think some people have a rougher time of it. We had a little bit of a delayed start to this flu season, but it's going full speed now. So, you know, it's gone up at a pretty fast clip. There's now a moderate flu risk throughout the state. We're running flu numbers now that are ahead of both national and regional averages, which normally in years past, with the exception of last year, is where we are. Louisiana typically has one of the worst flu seasons in the country for whatever reason. But again, it kind of started a few weeks later this year than it typically does. But now it's very much flu season, which, you know, concerns me for a couple reasons. You know, we had no flu season last year, so there's a lot of people that might get exposed this year. I think it's going to place a lot of stress on the hospitals too, and they're pretty stressed right now. All that by way of saying, you know, for your listeners, if you haven't yet gotten the flu shot this year, there's still merit in doing so. I would recommend doing it as quick as you can, because flu cases are picking up very quickly.
Are there as many, you know, I know typically in non-COVID years, there's a lot of it available and easy to get. I don't see it as easily accessible
you know,
this
it's
time
there. It's just not, yeah, it's not being advertised as much, because I think a lot of the pharmacies are, I mean, they're still trying to push out flu COVID vaccines and booster shots, but they're all stocked. We've gotten no reports of any shortages. You might have to ask for it, because I think, you know, a lot of the marketing now is going towards, you know, letting people know where they can get a booster or a COVID shot. But all these pharmacies have the flu shot, and there's plenty of supply of it.
Right. Let's go to Earl. He's got a question for you, Doc. Earl, you're on with Dr. Joe Cantor.
Hello, Dr. Cantor. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Earl. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. First of all, thank you for all the hard work and dedication you put into trying to help keep us healthy during this pandemic. And hopefully I got a simple question. I've been vaccinated, both shots. I've been boosted. And I got the virus probably 4 weeks or so ago. Am I protected now from this thing or what?
Yeah, that's a good question, Earl. I hope you did okay with it.
Yes, I did. I had very minimal symptoms.
Good. You know, if you got it 4 weeks ago, then, you know, ballpark 50-50, you had Delta or Omicron, just by what the prevalence was at that point in time. Maybe Delta. Okay. You know, you're not protected against getting infected again, but you are have significant protection against getting very sick, which ultimately is the most important thing.
Yeah. And I did get the monoclonal antibodies, which I found out is so. Yeah, well, my wife actually got it first, and I got it from her because I just refused to leave her. But
yeah,
both of us are doing fine.
I'm sorry y'all had to go through that. I mean, I think, you know, I don't want people to hear that and think, well, what's the point of getting vaccinated and boosted if you're still going to get it. You know, as we talked about at the top of this hour, you know, we do see breakthrough infections, but the thing to remember is you're going to have a much, much more mild illness if you get sick at all, if it's a breakthrough infection.
Yeah. Yes, we did just fine. My wife, I think, was sick one day, and I really think I was almost asymptomatic. I had a runny nose, and that's about it.
Good.
And we did fine. Both of us are fine, back at work, and going on with life now. But
well, that's good to hear, Earl.
I just wanted to kind of see how, you know, if we're protected from it now or just whatever, we're going to just keep doing what we're doing, I guess.
There you go. Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks.
Doc, a couple of things that are kind of still looming out there. I mean, you and I have talked about messaging over the last 2 weeks. For a while there, I thought the messaging couldn't get any worse, and And I knew you would chuckle because it has. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure where you are on this, but I mean, they've got me scratching my head so much, I'm about to pull my hair out of my head on some days.
I mean, to clarify for the listeners, I'm presuming you're talking about the CDC, really.
Yes.
I agree. It's not how I would have messaged things. They did some big changes to their isolation and quarantine guidance. They shortened it. They made it more practical, more reasonable. And I don't think I take issue with the decisions they made. It's not how I would have communicated it. I think it definitely sowed a lot of confusion. I think, you know, what they're trying to do is to recognize that Omicron is spreading so very fast that they had to make some adjustments based on, you know, the data that they have now that shows, you know, most people are infectious a couple of days before to a couple of days after symptoms starting. You know, I think they were trying to be pragmatic in their approach, but it's not how I would have communicated that myself.
Yeah, and I guess, so what are truths? I mean, you know, we're hearing again that these cloth masks and maybe the surgical masks are not the right masks, that, you know, we should be back at the N95, KN95 mask. That's what was said early onset. Then it changed, and it looks like it's reared its head again. Cloth masks don't work. True or not?
You know, yes and no. So, and it's not going to help you with the communication part. They, you know, masks do two things.
This may be the first time you've equivocated.
The masks serve two purposes with COVID. You know, number one, they protect people around you by reducing your, I'll call it a respiratory plume. But when you exhale or cough or laugh or sneeze or talk, you know, it reduces how much air you blow around you. So masks protect those around you. On that aspect, cloth masks are pretty good. I mean, they're not 100%, but they do significantly reduce how much breath you spread with those around you. The other thing masks do is they protect you. And on that level, cloth masks do not provide nearly as much protection as a KN95 does or an N95. So, you know, I feel comfortable standing next to someone who's wearing a cloth mask. I feel like that's going to reduce their respiratory plume directed towards me. But I'll tell you, now that we're in the surge, you know, I have not gotten Omicron yet. And I would like, you know, if I have any choice in the matter, I would like to continue not getting it. So when I go out in public now in this surge, I put on a KN95. I didn't used to, but there's so much COVID out there. I do it now, and they're pretty easy to get online. I bought a 40 pack for about $16 in the middle of December. Right. So it's how comfortable you are and how much protection you want for yourself. The cloth mask does a good job to protect those around you. If you want added assurance for yourself, then I recommend a KN95, because that's a good balance of comfort as opposed to N95s, which are pretty hard to wear for a whole day and still offers good protection. That's what I would recommend.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Joe Cantor's final thoughts. Stay with us, folks. We're back with Dr. Joe Cantor. Doc, one of the things I was surprised about that was said, and I think it was Dr. Rochelle Walensky that said it, is that some of this is actually the remediation measures was what they thought people would be willing to accept. My interpretation of that is that a lot of this might have ended up just being symbolic. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think she was trying to express the practicality. Again, I don't think I totally agree with that, but I think it was clear that, you know, the 10 and 14 day quarantine isolation guidance was just not it just wasn't tenable, particularly in this Omicron wave. And she was trying to respond to that. I don't think she communicated it as I would have, but I think that's what she was trying to get at, I think.
Right. Well, Doc, as always, this hour flew by, and we really appreciate your time and your persistence in answering these questions. One equivocation in going into our third year. Not bad, Doc.
I'll take that. Thanks, Noah.
Oh, you got to laugh to keep from crying sometimes, Doc, I tell you.
That's right.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year to you. Glad the family's doing well. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You as well.
All righty, folks. After the top of the hour break, we'll visit with Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, about the crime issues. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.